Okay, so let's get started here. We've been discussing how ones should be distributed between the two parties to an agreement. We saw the stira between the Gemara in Kedusha and the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Tosafot said that the distinction is resolved along the lines of a distinction between poel and an eved whose guf is kanoi. Then an ones will be the Baal HaBayis is lost to bear. A poel whose guf is not kanoi, the loss will be the poel's to bear. We saw that Maharam Rutenberg disagreed with this. Maharam Rutenberg didn't think that the distinction turned on guf o kanoi, lav guf o kanoi. He thought it turned on whether you prepay for the service or only are willing to pay ex post. I think there are two or three ways to understand the Maharam's distinction. One way to understand the Maharam's distinction is, I think, what I was pushing, which is this strong, but without much textual support, the stronger idea that if you prepay, then the contract takes on the form of like a transfer of a property right. So if you pay in advance, it's like you're acquiring the labor and it becomes the Baal HaBayis' loss. Whereas if you're only willing to pay ex post, then the nature of the agreement is more a contingency that if work is done, then there's a duty to pay. But if there's impossibility and no ability to perform, there's not going to be any obligation to pay. That was my reading of Maharam's distinction. I think some of you are offering a weaker reading, right? I think, Gabe, you led this this camp, right? Do you want to tell us again what your reading of the Maharam's distinction was?
The distinction and with Cole's support, the implicit acceptance of risk and commitment to the contract that you make by paying in advance.
Yeah, I think that's a very nice way of putting it, that it's more about the assumption of risk. So if you pay in advance, then you're assuming the risk of future onsen. So like by prepaying, you're expressing your willingness to absorb a greater amount of risk, and therefore you bear the risk, you assume the risk. If you're only willing to pay ex post, then there's no acceptance of risk and the risk remains with the poel. That was an alternative way of reading the rush, also a very nice reading. It's not so different from my interpretation of the rush, though I think my interpretation rests more on this idea of whether we view the transaction as a hakna. Whereas your reading is more about just, I guess, an umdana about assumption of risk. You might think that assumption of risk would follow this idea of kinyan, right? An owner usually assumes the risk. But I think one of the virtues of your reading is that you can say that even if he's less than an owner, even if the Baal HaBayis wasn't fully kona the labor, there could be more external reasons for assuming that he accepted the risk. Right, Gabe? That's the general idea?
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Yeah. And there was a third interpretation of the Maharam, which is the way the Shach was reading it, the Shach and Shin Lamed Gimel Hei. The Shach wanted to argue that prepaying it is just a hechetimtzi for assuming that there was a gufo kanoi. I mean, it's like there was a hakna of the guf of the poel, and once there's a hakna of the guf of poel, the loss is going to be on the Baal HaBayis. That's how the Shach wanted to read a lot of these Rishonim. I pointed out last time that the Shach seems to be close to my camp, that prepaying is a proxy for hakna, except that the Shach interprets a hakna as inhering in the guf of poel, whereas I'm interpreting hakna as going on the pu'ula and the labor. Okay, that's where we left off. We saw the Shach cited a bunch of Rishonim that he thought their formulation suggested that prepaying serves as a proxy for Hakana. So he cited the Taj Beis Katan, and Yoni was helpful in telling us that the Taj Beis Katan is really in Simen Tov Kuf Chav Zayin. Here's the formulation of the Taj Beis Katan. He raises this distinction, the contradiction between the Sugin Kedushin and the Sugin Bamitzia. And he says, Hani Mili, the only time it's true that the Baal HaBayis bears the loss is Gabe Eved Ivri, who becomes sick. Sheparu lo kol schara mitchila b'shah shekana oso, where the money is prepaid, right? The Baal HaBayis pays when he acquires the poel. The ein shum chov mamon alav. And it's not that the Baal HaBayis has just some debt to pay for services provided. So it sounds like he's setting up this distinction here between idea of gufo kanoi, so prepaying in advance, and then postpaying as a debt for the service rendered. Kidar minan gabe avid ivri gufo kanoi. Aval melamed shehu kischir yom leolam ein nosen lo schar masher lo asa afal gavden enas. When it comes to a poel, which it seems to work through this idea of a debt, he works, that generates an obligation for you to pay, the poel will never be entitled to compensation for work that he doesn't do. But Eved, who's paid in advance, and it doesn't work through this idea of debt, then you're going to have to pay him even if there's some onus. So I think what the Shach is pointing out in this Tashbetz and Tavkov Chav Zayin is that the Tashbetz is really conflating the distinction of prepayment, postpayment, with the distinction of gufo kanoi, lav gufo kanoi. And so the Shach thinks that's sufficient evidence to say that the whole prepaying, postpaying distinction is just a proxy for whether there's a kinyan haguf. All right? So that's nice evidence, I think, for the Shach's interpretation. Again, I think you could read the Tashbetz here as not going that far as the Shach's going, because you might say that the Tashbetz is just using the fact of gufo kanoi as a proxy for prepayment. And what's really important in his view is the fact that you paid in advance, and maybe even on Gabe's reading, you assume the risk. So the Shach's right here to point out that there's a connection between gufo kanoi and prepayment, though I'm not sure that he's right to say that what's morally relevant is the gufo kanoi aspect, as opposed to the fact of paying in advance. And gufo kanoi is just used as evidence for why you would pay in advance, because it's like a sale. Gabe, you have thoughts on this? Gabe? Okay. Yakir, you have thoughts on this? Well, you don't want to wake up Uri over there, but...
He's awake.
Okay.
Still not
there.
But yeah, no thoughts so far.
Okay, good. The Rashba makes a similar point, also that, and it sounds almost like it's a verbatim, like they use the same phrase as that appears in that Tashbetz. Again, that when it comes to a poel, menachin lo min adamim lefi hazman shechala, but it's not true for a case where you pay in advance. Again, hani mili evet ivri sheparalo kol scharo mitchila sheish misha shekno, because ein shum chov mamon olav kinamina gabi evet ivri gufo kanoi. Ava melamed shehu kischir yom leolam ein lo schar me'asher lo asa afal gavden enas. So the Rashba, like the Tashbetz, has this conflation of prepaying, postpaying, with whether there's a kinyan. Yoni Zolti has a hand. Let's take Yoni's hand.
I think I agree with you about the conflation could be read either way. If there's there might be a slight difference. I mean, the language almost verbatim, but if you scroll a little bit, so you can see that. You can see that at the very end, there's some tiny little change that could be really significant. But the Tashbetz language is that Lame Shus is free or low on a noteni low star. I'm not sure I'm saying you don't get it done. But for the Rashba, it's Lame Shus is free on a low star.
Yeah, it's interesting point. Hold on. Just hold on 1 second. Let's get out. No?
Come on.
Soon I'll come out for you, okay? Not right now. Because no. No?
That's rude.
You could say hi to everyone very quickly. Say hi to everyone in the middle. Say hi.
Hey, Noam.
Noam, I want to say hi to everybody very quickly. And then we're gonna go inside. Yeah, so Yoni, sorry about that. You got cut off, so go for it.
Yeah, so I was just saying there's a minor difference, which might not matter that much, but in the Tash basis language, yeah, that the Olami Notin Loschar, Meshur Losa, you don't give him. For the Rashba language, he doesn't have it, which might suggest that the Tashbetz that matters about giving him the money he hasn't paid yet, in which case if he already has been given the money and prepaid, then maybe you wouldn't agree with what he's saying and that you really would get fully paid. Whereas for the Rashba, where the language says in loschar, he doesn't have the payment, he doesn't deserve that payment.
That's interesting. I mean, one of them
prepaid might not matter.
It's interesting. One sounds like more fundamental than the other one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice distinction between them. I could hear that distinction. Good. Anybody else have thoughts on this? I suppose. Well, yeah. I think that's good for our purposes right now. I guess there's another way to understand the prepaying postpaying thing, and that just might be along the lines of, as we have a comment from Noah. Are you saying that the Taj Bates has the Misa approach? And the Rashba is more gufo kanoi. Is that what you're saying, Yoni?
Not exactly. No, I'm more saying that the Rashba. No, I'm saying that the. Well, the Tash Bates has, I guess, doesn't have to be gates. It could be Itamar is also just more akin to what the Mordechai said, the Maharam says.
Right.
And the Rashba is, yeah, I guess, more gufo kanoi. And then that would again.
Well, let me think about that a little more. But I see that you're diak in the different formulations in the Rishonim here. Let's move on to the Ktsos. The Ktsos in Shin Lamed Gimel Sifkat and Yud cites the Shach, who interprets all these prepaying and postpaying distinctions along the lines of Gufo Kanoi. And he says, he thinks that if you look back at the Shach, you recall that the Shach tried to bring the Ritva into his camp. He said, "V'chein dasa ritva parakama de kiddushin," and the Shach wanted to argue the ritva distinguished along between the sugyas between a case where you're hired out for a specific task and a case where you're hired for all sorts of tasks. Right? Here's his formulation: the Gemara b'Mitzia. It says, "Lo dami pol evede ridi ilu pol kablan." His skiro balabayis la malacha zu al davar yadua no tel scharo. The kivan shelo asao alpha pisha cholo nenas eno l'schar masha asa l'fi cheshbon. If you're hired for a specific task, then your compensation is tied towards your performance of the task. Aval evid ivri lo nishtabid l'lasos davar yadua al nishtabid lo sheichfu l'mlachto lo mar shekol melachto tehe l'rabo. So the Ritva distinguished between a case where you're hired out for all the tasks, in which case the hefsed is on the balabayis, and a case where you're hired for a specific task, in which case the hefsed is on the poel. So the Shach thought that this is a gufo kanoi distinction. The Ritva seems to, the Ktsos disagrees. The Ktsos says that v'divei haritva hi shita acheres. Lechalik bein mishtabed lechol hamalachos o ledavar yadua. So he thinks the Shach is wrong for trying to assimilate the ritva into the category of gufo kanoi lav gufo kanoi. It's really a separate distinction between whether or not you're accepting lots of different labor or just a more targeted task. Okay, uleshitaso, according to the ritva, hu adin bepoel she mishtabed lechol hamalachos din eved ivri yeshlo. You could be a total poel, right? Clearly not an eved, not gufo kanoi. And still, if you're nishtabed l'chol ha-malachos, the loss will be on the balabayis. So, does anybody have a good theory?
Itamar, doesn't the Ktsos quote the din of, I forget what it is in Hebrew, the field flooding?
Nistach basadeyu, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a... That's a gufo kanoi type.
It is. It is a gufo kanoi type of language. I would push back, though, and say that the language itself could be interpreted along the lines of saying, well, it's the balabayas's, the loss falls on the balabayas's side of the court, right? And you might think that the reason for that is not so much because the polo's guf is kanoi, but you might say that the more... the contract focused on a specific task to be performed, then the greater the presumption that an inability to perform this task will vitiate the basis for compensation altogether. I hired you to mow my lawn. If the mowing of a lawn becomes impossible, then you're not going to be paid. But if I hired you as like an all-purpose kind of worker, you might say there's a stronger presumption that the balabais will absorb certain risks. Because if you can't do task A, I can still assign you to task B. If you can't do task B, I can still assign you to task C. If you can't do task C, I can assign you to task D. And so the fact that the employment covers such a wider scope, you'll say that implicitly that puts more of the loss in the balabaises and the balabaises camp. So I don't know if we have to reduce this to Gufo Conway, and I think that's what the Katsos is getting at. But Cole, you want to follow up?
Yeah. I don't see why. Yeah. We're
all right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what's nice about the Katsos is that he's explicitly trying to separate the Ritva from the Gufo Kanoe Shitos. And
which is weird, because the Ritva says Gufo Kanoe. Like, that's the Ritva's view.
Does he say?
Ritva has Gufo Kanoe language about Skiris Paul.
In this context or in general?
In general.
Right, no, for sure in general, but the point is that it's not the Gufo Kanoe aspect that explains why the balabais absorbs the loss in the case of a Poel Shaniskar Lechol HaMelachos. It's the scope of the employment that explains why it's the balabais is lost.
Yeah, but what explains the scope of the employment is probably the fact that Gufo Kanoe. I mean,
that's the shach. That's the shach's reading of the Ritva.
Yeah, well, I mean, what else would explain the, these things stand or fall together. Like, there's no...
So what
it
makes
a lot of sense to me that one of the things that Gufo Kanoe would mean a priori is that we, you know, the guy, you know, he's, his time belongs to you.
Right.
Not just that you're contracting for a particular task, but his time belongs to you.
So I agree with that. I'm just trying to, I agree with that a priori analysis. I'm just saying in light of the Katsos' interpretation of the Ritva, it sounds like we could offer an alternative theory, which is that maybe the scope of the employment maybe bears on the acceptance of risk. So insofar as I just hire you for a specific task, there's no presumption that I should pay you if you're unable to perform. But the more I hire you as an all-purpose kind of person, then that shows that I'm accepting a greater threshold of risk because I know if I can't assign you to A, I could assign you to B, and then if not, then C, then D, then E, et cetera, et cetera. So implicit in the agreement is that I'm going to, you know, I could provide you with other kinds of labor if specific tasks are unperformable.
And why should that, where's the extra acceptance of, what does risk have to do with this?
Because if any specific performance is impossible, I could still supply you with different kinds of labor. So I'm implicitly, by hiring you as an all-purpose worker, I'm implicitly hiring you even if any one particular of the possible tasks is made impossible.
But this is a case in which the guy is disabled from performing any task.
Right. I agree. So I think that's part of, I agree that that's a good objection here. So, but I'm trying to make it more plausible.
I don't see why these things should have anything to, the payment in advance as a risk factor makes sense because the money's now in this guy's pocket and, you know, maybe that's what they agreed on, but it's not clear to me why it's much better to explain the assumption of risk as how, which is why I realize I might have missed what the Katsos says here about that I've highlighted. Do my highlights show?
No.
Or is it only Europe?
No, they don't show on. Unless you go to the Google Docs separately.
What?
No, they don't show up on mine right now.
Okay, fine. The Eved Ivri being Yeah, it's just, the evidentiary being a that being a property relationship would explain why the would explain the assumption of risk in that case.
Correct. That's the Schatz read.
Yeah, I just don't see
the alternative.
Yeah, I don't see why the alternative. Yeah.
Anyway, you want to try to help motivate the alternative, or if not, we'll move on for now. Anybody want to help? Yoni Zolti.
I think it's not totally so intuitive. I think it's a rather weird, interesting svara, but I think the basic idea that the Stoics reading into Ritva is that if you're employed for all general work and not any specific work, so then the employer now effectively owns more of the work itself, and it's kind of the contract is more of an acquisition in that he has acquired the work, as opposed to if it's only one specific work that only hired for one particular task, so then the employee is considered to be more identical to a kablan in that he still owns his work, and therefore if he's not prepaid for, if he's not paid already, if he's not paid, if he hasn't completed, sorry, then he won't get paid. But if the employer owns the work in some way because it's more general work, and therefore it's more in his pursuit, then he's called Gestap Hasadeu, and he's responsible if there's any onus.
But that's very close to the Kenyan idea, right?
Yeah, I think you can tweak it depending on how expansive you want to make for Kenyan, either because it's a Kenyan Guf idea or because the Kenyan of Malacha of some sorts. But I think that'd be the general direction. It's kind of what I understood from you, what you were saying.
Yeah.
About what the Ritva would have to believe.
It could be. Let's not.
I don't want to delay us.
Yeah, we shouldn't perseverate too much on this Ritva point. So let's, we'll meditate on it. Until now we've been working, so let's move on in the interim. So until now we've been working with the assumption that the straightforward reading of the Sugim B'Mitzia is that the Poel is not entitled to be paid for the work that he doesn't do, and it's only the Sugya and Kiddushin that suggests that a Eved should be entitled to be paid for a sick time. I want to challenge that reading now, and I think Yoni was pointing us to this earlier. You recall, I'm just going to go back to the language of the Gemara in B'Mitzia for 1 second. The language of the Gemara was, here it is, Hasocher es apoel lechati ayom shama shemes lo mes hoshach zaso chama im socher hu nosim lo schara im kablon hu nosim lo kablonuso. And so the Rishonim read this to mean that, at least the Rishonim that we've seen so far read this to mean that he's only entitled to be paid for the work that he did. But if you just read the Braisa itself, nosim lo schara or nosim lo kablonuso can mean that if the poel gets sick, you got to pay him the entire schar. I think this might be the reading that the Mordechai gives to the sugya. The Mordechai that I put up here in Simen Shin Mem Vav says the following: Hasochar Sapol Lachati Ayom Shama Shemes Lames, etc., etc. Hoil the Anus, since the Poel is Anus, right? It's kind of force majeure that he can't work. He got sick. No Sein Lo Balabayis Charo Mishalim. So the Balabayis has to pay his full schar. And the poel doesn't have to make up for the lost time that he didn't work. So I think that Mordechai here seems to be saying, he's saying, look, by analogy to the case in Kiddushin, our sugya is saying the exact same thing. A poel is entitled to be paid even if he can't work machmas ones. Now, he does raise an interesting prima facie objection. He says, we have this sugyan ksuvis that says, and we don't have to get too mired in the discussion in ksuvis, but the sugyan ksuvis talks about a husband and a wife or a man and a woman who are about to get married, and they're supposed to have a wedding date, or they set a wedding date, and for some reason the wedding can't take place on that day. So the halacha usually says that the husband has it's a din there whether the husband has a duty to start supporting his wife with mizonos. And the Mordechai says, based on that Gemara, that if the wedding day comes about and the wife gets sick, And that's why the wedding can't go through. The husband's not obligated to start supporting her. So the Mordechai sees this as, at least on the face of it, intention with the idea that a poel should be paid for sick time, right? If a poel should be paid for non-performance, then maybe the wife, who's also gets sick and is kind of onus, she should be entitled to mizonos, even if they're not able to go through with the wedding. That's kind of the thing that he sets up as a problem. He proposes an answer, which I think is right. He says, "Shiny hasam, the wedding case is different. De ein habal chayv lazona el lechimati zman hanesuin v'yachal lekonsa. There's no duty to start supporting the wife until the nesuin goes into effect. Aval hacha de hischil b'melachto v'chala alav chovas tashlum schiruso v'hadar chala nistach basadeyu shabal abayis." See, it sounds like he's drawing a distinction between a case where the poel gets sick lacher haschalas hamalacha and a case where the poel gets sick before haschalas hamalacha. Before haschalas hamalacha, the Baal HaBayis has no duty to pay the poel for work that wasn't done. And I think that makes a lot of sense. But once there's haschalas hamalacha and then the poel gets sick, we view the ones as happening in the reshus of the Baal HaBayis, and the poel would be entitled to be compensated. Again, just hischil b'melachto v'chala alav chovas tashlum. Once there's some sort of kinyan through haschalas hamalacha, I think the Mordechai believes the property right has been transferred to the poel. The poel is now entitled to be paid for his services, and the loss falls in the reshus of the Baal HaBayis. Because you might say the Baal HaBayis already acquired the labor after haschalas hamalacha, and therefore any onus is his loss to bear. So I think the Mordechai might be a very nice way of explaining the shita that I was reading into the Maharam, which is that once there's a kinyan on the malacha, the ones will accrue to the Baal HaBayis and it'll be his loss. Not because of any idea of gufo kanoi, right? It's just that kivan shehiskel b'malachto, the chovas tashlum goes into effect, and therefore the Baal HaBayis bears the loss. Okay, does anybody have... Yeah, I think it's just like in the same way that you could transfer a property right in a physical asset, you could view the contract as a transfer of a property right transfer the normative right to have something done. And if some onus happens to that property right, then the owner bears the loss.
Why the right to have something done should lead to an obligation to pay if the thing isn't done. It's a right to have something done. So presumably that would imply a duty to perform correlative on the part of the poel. I don't see why that implies a duty to pay if the poel doesn't perform.
Yeah. Anybody want to respond to Cole? Or
I wasn't sure why we use the term the right perform. Like, that's...
The right to have something performed.
Right, but something already has been performed. I think that's...
No. It's Hasala Samalacha. The guy is, you know, an hour into an eight-hour job.
But something... That means that there has been something actually physically done.
Yeah. But there's a seven-hour job left to do, and the guy gets sick. And so there's, you know...
We're focusing on the 7 hours and not the 1 hour that was...
Because the Mordechai thinks that you have to pay the guy for the 7 hours that he's not doing.
Right.
It's unclear what the relationship is between...
So, Cole, you can't think about... You're saying you can't wrap your head around the idea of, like, the entitlement to the work. The work has been sold, right?
Right.
You can't... That's what you're having trouble wrapping your head around.
Yeah, I mean, like, is your idea that... So, I get, like, put it this way. If what the Mordechai is saying is true, then, you wouldn't need, then, if what the Mordechai is saying is true, then whence the obligation for the worker to perform it? In other words, the Ashkalos of Halacha seems to just be like the way the Poel triggers the obligation of his employer to pay. When's the obligation to perform? But why is that? What's the principle that the worker is supposed to get the work done, and his getting sick or a person in his family passing away exempts him from that. But if his starting the work day, if what it does is trigger the obligation in principle for the employer to pay the whole thing, what's supposed to trigger his obligation to do the work?
So
he gets the whole thing backwards.
Does it? I think that's what the Balabais purchase is. The Balabais essentially now owns the normative right of the labor, right? So what you've sold him is effectively is the duty to perform.
Why is it that if there's no onus, why is it that when the worker backs out, he doesn't get paid for the whole day? According to the Mordechai. After all, the whole right's been paid for. What you have to say is that the difference between the whole day and just that he's done depends on the circumstances of withdrawal, which in turn are grounded in... But it's the same property right that was purchased. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I'll say two...
Can I defend the Mordechai?
Yeah, let me just say one thing, and then you can take Eitan and Yoni. Cole, the way I see it is that it's analogous to if I sell you my house and then I fail to give it over to you, so the Beis Din could step in and either compel me to give it over, or they can make me pay damages, right, for not having turned it over. And something analogous is going on when you're Chozer Bemtza Melacha. So the idea is that either we're going to... So there's a special Gzeiras HaKasev for Poel, so we have to factor that in. But the reason why you're not entitled to the rest of the salary, arguably, is because you're mazik me in some way, right? Like you failed to turn over the house. But more than that, Cole, I would say that some Rishonim think that in principle the Poel is entitled to the whole contract. Remember, Yad Poel Al Ha'al Yonah, just less the cost of completion, right? I think that supports my reading. Once there's Atzchalas HaMelacha,
cost of completion.
Only because that's a kind of nezek, right? You've harmed me by...
only because that whole... Don't deflate. That's the whole thing, is that you haven't... The nezek is not some external thing.
It is. That's the point. No, the nezek is external to the contract.
Crazy. Not at all. It's not even that external at all. Crazy. All right, Alright,
Eitan,
you can't do worse than that.
Eitan and Yoni.
Yeah, so what I would just say is that I think that I understand and I hear where Cole's coming from, but the one thing I find that Cole is missing is that by saying, oh, there's the only difference is circumstantial, that there's you have in one situation the guy is sick or he has to go away because he has to bury his relative, in the other case he's just backing out because he chooses to back out. I think that is significant and totally changes the complexion of the entire contract and agreement that you have. It can't just be that, oh, you have these circumstances, so therefore they should be the exact same case.
Yeah.
Those circumstances totally impact and shift how, A, the Poel is viewed in relationship to the owner, and B, how the owner should be or should not have to be compensated for the work not being.
I think you're 100% right. And where we would expect that difference to show up is in exempting the worker from a cost that he would otherwise have to bear in case he withdrew under the same circumstances for less than compelling reasons. And lo and behold, generally speaking, he does have to pay damages if it's a davara aved, which is the only time this whole discussion comes up. And when he has to bury his dead, he doesn't have to. Perfect. The Mordechai is... Noach Mitzvah Greisen, though. I mean, it's something else. Anyway, I'm not going to be persuaded about this. You shouldn't. I'm sorry, Noah Marlowe. No, Marlowe is not the
right.
Anyway,
the last thing I would would say, which is interesting, is that the Cholek case, if we're talking about, I think this is like what Itamar was saying about how Nezek and Zekin in general are not at the forefront here. When we're talking about Ones, specifically by a Cholek, there's a large debate, obviously this is like a common question, like a large debate about like Ones and whether or not you're putter in the case of Nezekin. And so I think that that discussion also needs to be fleshed out when you're trying to figure out exactly how much or whether or not the Paul has to pay in a case where he is technically onus, whether that be sick or he's not able because he's married relative. So I think that A, understanding onus in the case of Nezekin, and B, differentiating between the two cases, I guess is maybe it's not enough for Cole, but I think that you can see, I can see at least, or maybe you tomorrow as well, that there is a difference in the two cases, and the Mordechai seems to be somewhat compelling.
As it happens, and we've discussed this in the Chavura, I think that a lot of futile Acharonish ink was spilled on the basis of faulty transferals of Nezekin concepts in Bava Kamma that have to do with like causation in physics to Nezekin comment contexts in Bava Metzia, and that have to do with things that have nothing to do with, you know, like an ox kicking a pebble. They're just not like all these Grumma discussions, right? And the Tos and other Akkar, they've nothing to do with wisdom is moving beyond Bava Kamma.
That's right. Yoni, you wanted to chime in?
Well, I'm happy to move on if we all want to move on, but I will just say I don't think you have to talk about Nezekin at all. Like, I don't think Grumma or Garmi has to deal with any of this. I think the argument is for the Mordechai that you've acquired the labor, so therefore the guy can't leave. The answer is, the problem with Cole's whole assumption is that he assumes the Poel could just leave whenever he wants to, but that's not true. He can't. The only reason he can is for the special dispensation to revive Avadim of Avadim.
You're wrong. That's he like can't leave. You have to bear a cost.
No, that's the whole point.
Of right, the special Gzeir Sakasov.
It's like special Gzeir Sakasov that he should be able to leave. I mean, like, you can disagree if they don't read it that way.
Oh, come
but
on.
This is only the Mordechai assumption.
This right. is a fine way of arguing.
That was the first thing I said to Cole.
Yeah, and this is the whole first semester we talked about this, that you can't really leave. You shouldn't be able to leave.
Right.
I listen. Some people, saw into, can see into the mind of God what the Havamina was and what the Maskana was. I'm a simple Jew. I'm just telling you what the law says. And the law
all right, so simple Jews don't understand Mordechai, is what I'm trying to say. It's not like, it's not that complicated. It's got this whole year, like... The Mordechai clearly believes, one of those people who believes it's akin to, if you believe the opinion on ghost theory, that the whole dispensation to leave is an exceptional exception. It's exceptional. It's not the rule. It's not the standard.
Right. Let's move on. Let's move on. We could talk. I mean, this is a very broad discussion. Let's cover some more ground, then we could talk more about this. Let me just point out. So I think the best reading of the Mordechai here is to say is that once there's a kinyan of Haskalas HaMelacha, the Baal HaBayis is Kona the Pa'ula, the Poel is Kona the Schar, and Mela the Ones falls on the Baal HaBayis. So I think this is a nice formulation of the non-Kinyan HaGuf idea, but of a Kinyan HaMelacha as executed through Haskalas HaMelacha. So I want to point out the Hagos of the Rama and the Mordechai here quotes Marina Rabbi Chanan, who just disagrees with the Mordechai's reading of the Sugya. The Mordechai's reading of the Sugya assumes that the Poel is entitled to the whole schar of the contract without performance. But Rabbi Chanan disagrees, and he reads it, I think, the way Tosfos read our Gemara in setting up the stira between Bav Mitzia and Kedushin. The Ein Nosein Lo Ela Schira She'ad Oso Shah. So I think there's just this disagreement here about how to read the Gemara in Bava Metzia and whether, in fact, there's a contradiction to the Sugya in Kedushin. Good. I want to point to other formulations in the Rishonim that I think follow this idea in the Mordechai, that Haskalas HaMelacha constitutes a transfer of the property right of the contract. So if you look here at the Shittu Kubetzes on Ayin Ches Amud Aleph citing the Nimuke HaTosfos, he says, Im chazar bo hamelamed machmas choli o ones, no sing lo scharo al masha avar. Okay, so if the poel is chozer because he gets sick, then he gets paid for the work that he, I guess, did in the past. Okay, And he says, Bamedvar, but not for the work that he didn't do, right? Bialazman ha'asid eino notal klum. But for the work that he didn't do, he doesn't get anything. But then he says, Bamedvar ma'murim bishelo li made klal. I think that's only if there was no haskalas hamalacha, right? He didn't start teaching. Bishelo li made klal mitchila. Aval im li made ktsas yitol velo yafsid klum. It sounds like he's saying here. Yeah. Yeah.
With the Google Doc.
Yeah, just zoom in a little bit.
Yeah, zoom in a lot of it.
Is that better?
A little more.
More than this?
Yeah, like 100% more than that.
It's too small still, I mean.
Yeah.
Is this better? Let me just...
That's all. Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Right, so close the door, yell it as much as you can. Sorry. Right, so he says, it sounds like the Mordechai is saying that if the Poel's chozer before he starts working, then the Poel's not entitled to anything if he's chozer machmas ones. Right, so the Poel's loss if the chazara happens before haschalas hamalacha. But if there is haschalas hamalacha, sounds like he's saying, right, as evidence to limit ktsas, yitel velo yafsid klum. So I think this is also another formulation akin to the Mordechai, that once there's an execution of the kinyan through haschalas hamalacha, then it's the baal habayis is lost to bear. So I think the question that interests me, it's not a question I have an answer to right now, would the same thing apply to a kinyan on the pu'ula, or is this unique to haschalas hamalacha? If you recall from our earlier discussions, we saw that some Rishonim think that Aschalas HaMalacha is the same as a Maisa Kinyan. So if there was a Maisa Kinyan performed on the contract, then it would also be the Baal HaBayis is lost to bear. Or would this be an interesting case where Aschalas HaMalacha arguably is stronger than a Maisa Kinyan? And maybe there's some reason to think that once the Poel acquires the Malacha through Aschalas HaMalacha, that would constitute a stronger kind of a kinyan on the schar and in transferring the property right of the pula than just like a formal non-haschalas hamalacha kinyan would be. I don't have any evidence one way or the other, but just the fact that they only point to haschalas hamalacha here might suggest that it's uniquely haschalas hamalacha that does this and not a maisa kinyan. Anybody have thoughts on that suggestion?
I feel like that's like a technical thing.
I mean, you don't see.
I guess there could be other. You know, I don't know what would be like if the Poel would give, or like the Baal would give Poel, I don't know, like Kalim to do the work. Like that would be an alternative. But I feel like it's just tech for technical reasons.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure. Wait, just guys, hold on one second. Slight distinction. All right.
My family, we have a phrase. We don't negotiate with terrorists.
That's right. I should adopt that here. All right. I just threw this out as food for thought, whether there are grounds to distinguish between Aschalas HaMalacha here, and I'm just noting that the Rishonim here specifically refer to Aschalas HaMalacha. Okay. Thus far, I've been assuming that the analytical framework for our analysis so far has been that the more we view the contract as functioning like the transfer of a property right, the more we'll assume that the Baal HaBayis has to bear the loss. And the more we view this as a conditional agreement, if work is performed, then you're entitled to be compensated, and the more the Poel will have to bear the loss. So it really turns on the nature of how we understand contracts and schiros in halacha. Let me just take a hand from Yoni before I... But what I want to do right now is to show that Rishonim are explicitly think in these terms, that where the onus falls will be a function often of who owns the onus, so to speak, who owns the property right, and that person... has to absorb the loss. Okay, Yoni, let's take your hand before we get to that.
Yeah, is there any, like, reason for why, if you were
Rosenberg suggests that Talat Malacha would be Dafka and Kinyan wouldn't be true for like the Mordechai and the Shittim Kubeset. Like, why that be true? Why wouldn't Talat Malacha be stronger in terms of guaranteeing compensation in terms of in case of onus?
Yeah. I think you might say that a Haskalah Samalacha maybe shows a greater investment of the Poel into the labor than simply some like formal kinyan that triggers it. So you might think like there's greater hefzid associated with the Poel being invested through Haskalah Samalacha than through his like signing a contract. Like if he just signed a contract, then yeah, of course the Balabayas could be Choser and Machmas Ones and the Poel loses. But once he's like there laboring on the field, then that's a stronger kind of acquisition, and the halacha will be less amenable to allowing the Balabayas to renege once that happens. Does that make sense, Yoni?
Kind of. Like, it's interesting, because would this be distinct from, like, any other nafkamin we talked about between Chav Malacha and Kinyan? Because, like, we discussed, I mean, like, a while ago about Chazara in general. So, like, is this, like, the one thing about Ones to be different, or do you generally have to argue that Chav Malacha is always stronger?
I think there are ways of explaining this, really, just on technical grounds, specific to Ones. That, you know, we want to protect the worker almost, and once he's there with boots on the ground doing the labor, the halacha wants to make sure that he can't be messed over by a later ones.
So it's like a takana, of course?
I mean, I don't know if it has to be a takana, but you might just think, I don't know, I haven't seen any evidence one way or the other, but that would be one way of motivating the idea. It's like to protect the poel from hefzid. It could even be midoraisa, that once he starts laboring, the halacha is hesitant to allow him to absorb a loss afterwards. Whereas... What's that?
As well. No, it would also be true for Chazara of Balabayit.
Well, we know there already are penalties. There already are penalties for Chazara of Balabayit, right? Yad al Tachtona. So.
Right. Okay. But I'm saying this would be. But I'm saying this would be in addition to it.
Yeah. This would be a separate idea, right? So it's meaning that the halacha will structure Haskalah Samalacha as a kinyan on the full schiras. Specifically in the case with respect to future onsen, right?
But not for Chazara Balabayit. That's what I'm just like a little confused why there should be a distinction if there's like a special dispensation to protect the poel.
Ah, you're saying the poel shouldn't be better off in the case of Ones than where the Balabayit is Chozer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Chazara Balabayit is clearly the worst breach. The Balabayit has no good excuse and he nonetheless breaches. Yeah, it's like much worse than.
Us. Right. It's interesting. Let me think about that a little bit. Let me think about that question a little bit. So that's a good point. Any other comments on this? Okay. So what I want to do now is I want to point to I want to point to the formulations in the Rishonim that show that the Rishonim are thinking in terms of that ownership will determine who bears the ones. Can I zoom out a little bit? Just a little too zoomed in on my screen. Can everybody still see with this size? Bonnie, can you see the screen still? Okay, good.
People can change on their own screen. Like, you can go to 50% and that could zoom in for other people. So that's what I've been doing. I wasn't complaining about
that. Got it. Okay, so look here at the Mordechai in Bamitzia Shin Mem He. I think this Mordechai, this Machlokes in the Mordechai and the Chuvus HaRashba is going to help us in appreciating this paradigm of whether we view Schiros as a kind of Hakna. So here's the question that the Mordechai was asked, that the Rami Rittenberg was asked. Nishal Abeinu Meir, Bileya Shesachar Abayis Umesa. So Leia rented a house from her landlord. So let's say she rented it for a year and she died in the middle of the term. So her Yarshim are arguing that they don't have any obligation to pay out the rest of the schiros. They only have to pay for the amount of time that she actually lived in the house. So if she lived in the house for 3 months, they'll pay 3 months worth of rent. But they're not obligated to pay out the rest of the contract that she had with the Balabais. That's the question that was sent to the Marmion Rutenberg. And obviously the landlord argued that he's entitled to the full amount of the schiros. Right? So this is a kind of a schiros batim equivalent to our onus discussion. So, Donnie, how would you have decided this case?
I'm thinking about it. It's interesting because, like, if we were saying from the earlier Mordecai, like, maybe that, like, once she has profited or once she has gotten something from that, the lease, then she's obligated to pay for the full time.
Yeah, since you might have said that based off the earlier discussion, but look what he says here. V'heishe b'ktzara shivchem, masha nira b'einai, im lo nasna kol haschiros, if she has not yet paid, hayorshim p'turin mikol masha lo darabo, kivan shenensa. Because it's onas, they don't have to pay for the amount of time that she didn't live there, only for the time that she actually benefited by living there. He cites a sugya in our parak, which we're going to discuss in our next chabura. But the underlying theory is that the Balabais here is not at fault. Okay, so there's no... Sorry. The underlying theory here is that based off that sugya, the tenant in our case is not at fault. And there is no presumption that the tenant had the obligation to make stipulations about what happens in a case of onus. And so therefore, he doesn't flush this out entirely... But I will flush this out based on our sugya. It sounds like it's kind of a hamotzi mechaber al haraya, something along those lines. The burden would be on the balabais in this case to prove that he's entitled to the woman's rent for the time that she didn't live there. And so he really has to absorb the loss right now. So the woman does not have to pay for the time that she didn't live there. He does say, the Mordechai does say, Miu mimasha daraba kfar im lo nasna yitna yarshin mishala. Obviously, they have to pay for the amount of time that she did live there from her estate. But they're not obligated to pay out the rest of the contract. And then, interestingly, he says, a maisa bal yadi be'echat shesachar melameid meisa tinok b'chatzi azman. Somebody hired a teacher, and the student died halfway through. Hu patarti habalabayis mimasha lo lamad mitam de pirashti. And on the same logic... Right, the Balabais only has to pay the Poel for the amount of work that the Poel did. Not you don't have to pay out the rest of the contract. Okay, does everybody see that? So what we get from this Mordechai is you pay for the work done. You don't have to pay for work that wasn't done. Okay. The Rashba in a Tshuva in Chelik Aleph Simen Elef Chaf Ches arrives at the opposite conclusion. The Rashba says, "Nishal od beruven shehiskir bias l'Shimon, u'me Shimon achar shnayim oshlosha chadashim shedar bekarka." So Reuven leased a property for about a year, and then he dies. I'm sorry. Reuven leases a property to Shimon, and Shimon dies for about a year, and then Shimon dies 2 or 3 months into the lease. So the question again is, "Im beno yachalomar lo beischa eni rotze." I'm only going to pay you for the amount of time that my father lived there, the 2 or 3 months. I don't have to pay out the rest of the term. And here's what the Rashba cites as an answer from the Ravid. Right? The halacha here awards the landlord the full amount of the contract for the year, not just for the time that the poel lived there. Why? Dekivan shesachar Shimon habayis. Harehu kim mecher gamor v'neschayev bedamim bein yidor bein lo yador. So, because he rented the property and there's a contract, the poel has to pay out the full value of the contract. Right? It's like there was a hakna, there was a mecher, there was a transfer of a property right, and therefore the ones falls on the person who owns it. The poel, for all intents and purposes, was kone the schiros of the bias. Sorry, the tenant was kone the schiros of the bias, and therefore the ones falls upon him. So I think one way of explaining this machlokas between the Rashba and the Ravid on the one hand, and the Mordechai and the Maram on the other hand, is that they're disagreeing over whether to conceive of a schiros contract in terms of hakna gemura, in the Rashba's language, kemecher gamur, In which case, the hefset is on the Baal Bayis. Sorry, in which case, the hefset is on whoever the kone is. Right? In the Schiras Batim case, it's on the tenant. In the Schiras Poalim case, it's on the Baal Bayis, who's kone the malacha. That's the Rashba's view. But the Mordechai and the Maram's view is not to conceive of it that way. It's really just a kind of a quantum merit. You do work, I pay you, and if there's no work that's done, then there's no basis for payment. So I think this provides like a very nice framework, almost an explicit example where the Rishonim engaged this paradigm for the analysis that we've been giving this far. Anybody have thoughts on this? Yoni has a hand.
Yeah, can't even the Mordechai and then agree that there is like a Kinyan and Guf even in this case, but the difference is in the Mordechai case is specifically a case where the onus is not the onus of the Poel, but the onus of the Baal Bayit. And that seems to be, I mean, I think it's a very different case. Like there's one, like case of, that he's dealing with, he equates to as if like the Baal Bayit is sick, like the, you know, the tutor, you're tutoring the son, you know, math or whatever, and the son and the child gets sick, or the Baal Bayit is sick, not that the tutor himself is sick. That's right. How he's equating it. In which case, you could argue that even if you hold Kinyan HaGuf, even if you held that you know, the labor itself or the Poel himself was acquired in some way, then in the Stap HaSadeh, where everything is owned by the employer, well, because the employer is the one who's the onus, so he might still bear responsibility. And therefore, maybe the conditions are a little bit different. Maybe Tanai comes into a question, or Motim Kavero. Like, the whole factors are very different. Well, for the Rashba, it's just like a very different discussion.
Well, first of all, I would say that Mordechai himself draws a direct analogy between the Schiras Batim case and the Schiras Poalim case, right?
Yeah, but he seems to be arguing that it's the reverse, that the case he argues that it's the Baal Bayit is the one who's the onus case, right? His whole example is like when it didn't rain, the Atta Mitra upstated the Poalim, given the Baal Bayit onus. The Baal Bayit is the one who's onus.
But that, well, hold on a second. Don't worry, don't get into his discussion of that sugya of the Asa Mitra yet.
Okay, so even the other stuff, the whole way through he's talking about the Baal Bayit being the onus.
Yes. But I think the point here is that he's saying in a Schiras Poalim case, when the Baal Bayis is Ba'ones, he has no duty to pay. Right? Which shows that it's not, we don't conceive of Schiras Poalim or Schiras in general as a Hakna Gemura. Right? That's what I think is that's what's important for our purposes, what emerges from the Mordechai. Yoni.
Maybe, or that even if there could have been Hakna Gemura, the Hakna Gemura like doesn't work the same way when it's the Baal Bayit who's onus, because since the Stap Chassadei, that whole logic doesn't apply since it's always been the Baal Bayit.
Okay, but if anything, wouldn't it cut the other way? Meaning, the more it's the Baal Bayis' onus, right? It's the Baal Bayis' child that dies that prevents the Melamed from teaching. You would assume it's the Baal... If it's the Baal Bayis' onus, it should be the Baal Bayis' duty to pay.
Well, I think that... I mean, we haven't discussed this case yet because we haven't gotten there in the court, but I think this whole time we kind of started this whole discussion of onus by first discussing, like, what do we do when people are onus? Like, how do we equitably decide who bears responsibility? So until now, all our discussions have been, well, when the Poel is onus, so here's how you decide responsibility. Some people say he's more responsible, that person is responsible, you get paid. So the sick time for not good is like a whole discussion. But once you start talking about the employer being the one onus, right, the boss himself can't pay or give you the job for whatever reason. So I think all of the discussion has to turn very differently. You can't start talking about factors like these topics today. Because it's always going to be Sadeh or Shabbat Bayit. That's never a fair discussion.
So
unless you conclude that the Baal Bayit is always responsible, which doesn't seem equitable either, so then you're going to start talking about other factors like Moshe Mechavero, who should have made the Tanai, who should not have made the Tanai, which seems to be what the Mordechai is getting at. That it depends on who makes the Tanai, who doesn't make the Tanai, when Tanai are expected, when they're not expected.
So our next discussion is going to talk about those Tanai questions. So that's going to be our Sugya on Thursday. But... So hold off on all those questions of who should have made a stipulation about that. I just want to object to the way you frame the point right now. You're right that Gabe, when we started this discussion, said, oh, maybe it depends where the onus falls. Is the onus that the poel got sick, or is it that the baal bayis got sick, or the pupil got sick, etc.? But remember, those like physical questions of who got sick are, they don't bear on whose normative rishus the onus fell, right? Because on the assumption that the baal bayis acquires the pula of the poel, the onus on the poel is really an onus in the baal bayis' normative rishus, right? It's the baal bayis' normative property right that was destroyed through the onus. So I don't think it's helpful for our purposes right now to start asking that question of was it the poel who got sick, or the baal bayis' child. My whole point in this analysis today is to show that if you conceive of schiras poelim as a mecher and a hakna gemura, then an ones on the poel is really an onsa de baal bayis, right? It's his property right that was destroyed. And what I'm trying to show in this analysis is that that's the machlokes between the Mordechai and Rashba explicitly in the Schiras Batim case, right? Whose rishus is the physical... So whose rishus is an ones on the Schiras? So it depends how you conceive of the Schiras. If it's a hakna, then it's in the baal bayis, then it's whoever the owner of the schiras is. So the tenant who entered into the contract, if he was kone the schiras batim, then an ones will be his loss to bear. If, on the other hand, it's only payment for the right to use the house, right? As I use the house, I'm obligated to pay. It generates a kind of a chov. Then the ones really falls on the baal bayis, because the baal bayis is not able to provide the service. Right? He's not able to provide the house to the tenant, in which case he bears the loss. Do you see that, Yoni?
I think the very beginning of your statement, that whether you agree, I guess, with what Gabe had framed in the beginning, I think I disagree with you. I mean, I don't understand large parts of like the Rishon on this, I guess, so I think it's like a large discussion I want to hold
in. Okay, good. We'll get to the discussion of Tanayim and who should have made what stipulations in our discussion on Thursday. Let me just get one other point out, which Yoni wanted me to address, and then we'll conclude and that'll be our conclusion for today. So the Ritva and Bamitziyayin Heim a base, and I just want to flag this discussion. I don't have much to say about it right now. So remember, the Ritva spoke about Hischaivas Mitamarev, etc., why Poelim could be liable when they're Chozer. And then he said, "V'das mori harav she'ein kol dine mishnasina v'gemara da'ala el v'misha sachar poalim ba'amir below kinyan. She'im neschayvu poalim b'kinyan, harei ha'malachem muteles aleihem, va'afilu im nensu chayavin lahashlima al yadam, ol al yedei acherim, ol l'shalei ma shehifsid baal habayis." So here the Ritva seems to say, b'shem rabo, that if there was a kinyan on the malacha, then even if the poelim were unable to perform machmas ones, they would still have a chiv to be mashlim the malacha, either on their own or through other people, or to pay whatever loss the baal bayis suffers. So I thought this is really interesting, and it seems to cut against what we've seen until now. Until now, we've seen the view of Tosvos and the Mordechai, that the more there's a hakna'a on the schiras, the more the loss, the more there's a hakna'a on the schiras poelim, the more there's the loss will fall on the rishus of the baal bayis, because the baal bayis was kone of the labor, and if there's an inability to perform, then it's the baal bayis' loss to bear. Here the Ritva seems to be saying, b'shem rabo, that if there was a kinyan on the malacha, then if the poelim are unable to perform for some ones reason, that they will still have a duty to make it up or compensate the baal bayis for their non-performance. So I'm not sure how to make sense of this Ritva. Why, the more there's a kinyan on the malacha, the more the law should be the poelim, unless he's just thinking in his own terms, in categories of chiyav mitam arev, and in terms of his chayvos, that if there was a kinyan on the hischaivus of the poelim, then we just view their hischaivus to be unconditional, meaning we're meshabit ourselves to do this work for you, and if we don't do the work, we're going to pay mitam arev damages. And if they did a maisa kinyan on that, then they're obligating them they're obligating themselves to pay damages unconditionally. Maybe that's what he's thinking in terms of. But otherwise, it's a bit of a mystery as to why he should think that the polem absorbed the loss. Yakir, you have a comment?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, maybe piggybacking off of the type of thing Yoni was talking about, I think that it depends, it might depend a lot what type of onus we're talking about. When he's talking about chayvin lashlima, maybe he's talking about the type of onus where the polem themselves are nenas, but the malacha is still completable afterwards, as opposed to a type of onus where the work itself becomes impossible to complete, in which case he may not say the polem suffered the loss.
Yeah, so this is like a case where like the onus is clearly on the polem themselves in some way.
Yeah, so that they, I mean, for him, the important factor is that the malacha remains a possibility to be mashlim afterwards.
Right. Although he does say olishale mashe hifsed balabayis, which would imply that it's not. What?
Sure, but I mean that could still be the same case.
Right.
Where they still go back and do it.
Yeah, but then it doesn't seem that the liability is mitam ones. The liability is because they didn't finish the job. Right. It's because they didn't go back to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the case is that there was a real ones on that day that they were supposed to be working.
I hear.
Distinguish between whether the onus made the malacha impossible to make up or not.
Or just delayed it in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I could hear that. Noah, you have a hand?
Yeah,
the Ritva seems like the opposite of the Shach. In the sense that the Shach says that there's some sort of like intention that the Baal has, and therefore he breaks the loss. So it seems like the Ritva is making the same proposal, but for the just for the with the Poel centered view, that the Poel takes some sort of like the Poel by doing Haspelas Malacha, the Poel is like showing his intention in the same way that the Baal Bai would.
Right, it sounds, I agree, it's almost the opposite of the Tosfos Shach camp. That whereas Tosfos and the Shach said that when there's a kinyan that puts the full liability in the Baal HaBayis, the full loss in the Baal HaBayis is rishus, the Ritva seems to be saying when there's a kinyan it puts the full liability in the polem rishus, right, Noah? No?
Yeah.
Right. But my question is why? Like, on what basis? So I understand the Shach Tosfos view because the Baal HaBayis is kone the malacha and he owns it in a certain way, and then any loss stemming from your ownership is the owner's loss to bear. But why should the Ritva's idea be true, right? Like, why should the Kenyan be, unless you view it as like some strong hischaivus to finish the job no matter what, or Yakir's way, it's more mysterious that the liability should fall in the Ritva's direction than in the Shach Tosfos direction, no?
Right. It means like an Uman Kon of Shvach type of thing, that like the Poel gets the like immediate benefit, and then the Baal has to get it back.
Right. But yeah, but usually we don't say that for a poel. That's what's so striking about it, right? It's true maybe for a problem, but it seems antithetical to the nature of a poel relationship, right?
Yeah.
So let's think about this. Oh, Yoni has a hand, and with this we'll conclude. But yeah, this is what I wanted to leave off with, just this thought. So Yoni, you get the last word.
Oh, wow, what a privilege. Why is it so hard to understand? I mean, like, a priori, like, we had to learn, like, all the secrets. Why is Ritva so difficult to understand? It's like the guy is sick, okay, so he's the onus, there's an nenas there. When he feels better, he should be hired to mashlim. Like, you've signed a contract, like, why shouldn't he have to finish painting the house? And if you can't finish painting the house, then you should have to pay for it, or, you know, finish it in some other way. Pay him off to finish it. That was the contract you signed.
Right, but I think that's only on Yakira's read, right? You're reading it like Yakira, that they could still do the job once the onus is over. Right.
Yeah, if they can't, then they should be responsible to pay up to finish the job. The Shalim Mashis.
So just remember that the Tosos's view is that if the poel becomes sick, the Shach view is that if the poel becomes sick in some way, the Baal HaBayis is lost to bear if there's a kinyan, right? If there's a gufo kanoe, if the Baal HaBayis is lost to bear because presumably he owns the malacha, right?
Sure, I think that, I mean, I agree. I think that I agree with what Noah said, that this is like very different than the Shach, different than Tosfos. It's the exact opposite. But I think there is logic to argue that
while we've been arguing about the responsibilities of the employer and whether the employer has to pay you, I think it's equally incumbent to talk about the responsibilities of Powell. And just because he's, you know, an onus, just because he gets sick or whatever it is, doesn't mean that now he, you know, gets out of doing the work. Like, he still has to paint the house. How can you just, you know, clean, get sick leave and never have to do any work?
Let me think about this for next time, what the best way to formulate that view would be. I mean, you're saying, like, in the same way that the Shach and whatever and Tosis could hold in a Gufo Kanoi case, the Balabais owns it, there's a way to formulate the contract in the opposite way, that, like, the Poel owns it, right? He owns the loss.
Yeah, a little bit parallel to, like, the Rav Moshe we saw earlier in the year that was talking about, like, the responsibilities the Balabais has towards the Poel, even though the main thing was talking about the responsibility the Poel had towards the Balabais.
Right.
Or kind of, like, the two opposites kind of connect.
Right.
Like, both directions are, work in tandem.
That's interesting. All right, so let's pick up with this thought for next Shavua. We'll spend maybe like 2 minutes discussing this Ritva, but then I want you to start. There's a really interesting sugya about Metzia Ayin Vav to Ayin Zayin, the Makoros that we have here on page 8. So work through that sugya Ayin Vav to Ayin Zayin. Really interesting, fascinating gemara about the different cases about some unexpected event. It rains, the field floods, how we allocate the loss between the Balabais and the Poel. So I think this is a really rich discussion here. And it's going to open up a new dimension to loss allocation in our sugya that we haven't seen yet. So prepare the Makoros and the sugya by Metzia and try to keep your mind open to what principles would determine whether we assign liability to one party rather than the other, not in terms of, not along the lines that we've seen until now. So not about ownership, who owns the contract, etc., but based on some other criterion that the Gemara seems to be discussing an Ayin Vav to Ayin Zayin. All right, everyone?
Question, should we prioritize the article also, or only if we have time?
I'd say the sugya first, and then the article. But you'll see the article, I think, will shed light on what's going on in the sugya.
Right, okay.
So I think once you read the article, especially once you read the article, it'll give you greater appreciation for what the underlying principle in the sugya might be.
Sure.
All right? All right, everyone, Yasher Koach. See you all on Thursday.
Bye, Noam.